happened back in the 1990s. A lady said something that offended a man in his church. This man was a brilliant man who had been raised in a Christian home, had been homeschooled, went on to college and graduate school. He had an earned doctorate in metallurgy and got a job as an engineer in one of the top corporations in America, making the equivalent of about $150,000 a year. He was a faithful leader in his church, served as a deacon, sang in the choir, taught a college and career Sunday school class. The man had bought an expensive tie. It had a lot of color and design in it. And between the Sunday school and church hour, a lady walked up to him and made a comment about his tie. He got offended. He immediately left the church and went home. The church was full that morning. The pastor was busy and did not notice that the man wasn't there. Sunday night, same thing happened. Man didn't come. The pastor was busy and didn't notice that he wasn't there. That week they had a deacon's prayer meeting and the man wasn't there. So the pastor called to check on the man, and the man's wife answered the telephone, and the pastor asked to speak to him, and the wife went to get him, and the pastor waited and waited and waited and waited, and I'll share more of that story later. Now, before I read my text, I want to open my message with a key thought drawn from Bible truths and Bible principles. All of us who are Christians are in a war. Even though this war is a spiritual one instead of a physical one, it is nonetheless a very real war. Paul said, though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. Paul also challenged Timothy to war a good warfare. Our enemy in this war is Satan, and he is out to defeat us, but he wants to defeat you in such a deceptive way that you will agree with him that your defeat was justified. You will unwittingly accept defeat. And the way he'll do it is with one word that I will give you after I read my text. And I'm going to ask you, if you will, I think it's wonderful you got your Bibles with you this morning, but I want you to read with me right off the screen, beginning with Psalm 119, verse 161 out loud. Everyone all together, please. Here we go. Princes have persecuted me without a cause, but my heart standeth in awe of thy word. I rejoice at thy word as one that findeth great spoil. I hate and abhor lying, but thy... Seven times a day do I praise thee because of thy righteous judgments. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Now, do you remember my opening statement? I want to throw it up on the screen and ask you to read it out loud with me. Everybody, please, all together. We are in a war, and the enemy is out to stop you and defeat you, but he wants to do it in such a way that you will agree with him that it was justified. You will unwittingly accept defeat, and the way he'll do it is with, and it's one word, and that word is offenses. Read the word, please. Offenses. The way Satan will defeat you is with offenses. I want to ask you a key question this morning, and that question is this: are you offended or are you unoffendable? Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. Then in Luke chapter 17, Jesus said to his disciples, it is impossible but that offenses will come, but woe unto him through whom they come. In other words, you and I should do our best to not offend other people, but no matter how much you try, three key words. Everybody read them, please. Offenses will come. Are you listening? Offenses will come. Don't look now, but an offense is already coming your way. And I'm already into my first point, which is on the possibility of offenses. But may I tell you, this is not just a high possibility. There is not a 90% chance that an offense is coming your way. This is a 100% certainty. In fact, I want you right now to look at somebody next to you and say these words to them. an offense is definitely coming your way. Everybody do that, please. An offense is definitely coming your way. Parents, I want you, all the parents, how many parents here this morning? Let me see your hands. All right, if you have a child, if you have one of your children next to you, I want you to look at one of your children right now, and I want you to say to that child, somebody is going to offend you. Say it, please. Somebody is going to offend you. There it is. Notice it on the screen again. Read it, please, everybody. Offenses will come. Husbands, I need you to look at your wives right now. There is my wife. We've been married for almost 49 years. And men, I want you to look at your wife, and I want you to say this to your wife right now. Honey, I don't want to, but I'm probably going to offend you sometime. All together, all the men. Honey, I don't want to, but I'm probably going to offend you at some time. Now, wives, I want you to look back at your husbands. And I want you, wives, to say to your husband, honey, I don't want to, but I'm probably going to offend you sometime. Ladies, say it, please. Honey, I don't. Now, did you notice that some of the ladies left out that part, I don't want to, and just said, I'm going to offend you sometime? And you know what? You know what I have discovered? That people who are not used to taking part like I'm having you take part, they get offended when you have them take part. And there's folks who's sitting here this morning, and you just sat there and never said a word. So can I just be honest with you and say, I'm probably going to offend you sometime this morning. Would everybody say together, Pastor Davis is probably going to offend us this morning. All together, Pastor Davis is probably going to offend us this morning. Pastor Royalty, would you stand right here, please? Could I promise you that either last week or the week before or the month before that or the month before that, your pastor probably offended you. So, Pastor, would you say to the folks, folks, I don't want to, but I'm probably going to offend you sometime. Would you go ahead, please?
Folks, I don't want to, but I'll probably offend you at some time.
And now, would you look at your pastor and say this, Pastor, we probably offend you sometime. All together, Pastor, we probably offend you sometime. Thank you, Pastor. And now we've got it established. Offenses will come. Everybody here has had an offense come their way at some time or other. And the question is not, are offenses coming? The question is, are you offended? Or are you unoffendable? You say, well, nobody can truly be unoffendable. But the Bible does say, great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. There's an interesting verse in Romans chapter 1, verse 20. It says, the invisible things of God from the creation of the world are clearly seen. So every time you and I look at anything in God's creation, we should ask ourselves this question, what spiritual truth does this illustrate? That squirrel, that fish, that bird, that dog, that cat, that animal, whatever, even cat. Whatever it is, God, look, God did not make things or creatures first and use them to communicate truths. Oh, no. God made truth first. And then He made all around us plants and animals to communicate all of God's truths. All of God's creation is meant to communicate the truths that God knows. Now, did you ever ask yourself, what is God's picture in His creation in nature of an offended person? I wonder if a particular African animal is not God's picture in nature of an offended person. And you know, I'm afraid to tell you, because I don't want to offend you, but I think the picture in creation of an offended person, please don't get offended, is a... I'm always scared to do this, preacher. God's picture in creation of offended person, I think, is a baboon. All right. Yes, yes. We were in Africa. And we were on a big game safari going through a national park, and missionary Brian Stensis was there. And we were looking at all these animals, and I saw, this is the actual picture from that day, a monkey up in a tree, and they stopped the safari vehicle. This is the actual picture of the day that it happened. And I got up with my camera, and I'm headed over to this tree where this monkey is, and I'm walking through this chest-high savanna grass, and I want to get over there and get a really good picture. Brian Stensis, the missionary, is back on his vehicle. He is making a film of me going over to take my picture. And he says, here goes the great Jungle Jim. He is walking over to get a picture of the monkey in the tree. Well, as I got within about 25 feet away from the tree, I'm about as close as I am to that door right there. All right? All at once, I heard something crack. The limb the monkey was on broke. And the monkey fell. And when it fell, we found out there was not one monkey in the tree. The tree was full of monkeys. And they started screaming and squawking and squalling. And I turn and I'm high-tailing it back as fast as I can. And Brother Stinson up here saying, Jungle Jim decided he didn't want to get as good a picture of those monkeys as he thought he did. But anyway, wow. A little while later, we stopped and picked up a game ranger, and we were telling him about the monkey in the tree and what happened. And he said to us, what's a monkey? I said, yeah, it was a monkey. He said, 'twas not a monkey. 'Twas a baboon. He said, there's something that most people in the world do not know about baboons. He said, baboons get offended and never, never forget. He said, you bother a baboon or someone in his family, that baboon will get your scent. It will track you down. It will follow you 20 to 30 miles away. It will remember you. It will come and get even with you. May I ask you, are you like a baboon? So there is the possibility of offense. Secondly, there is the positive purpose for or the positive potential of offenses. Now, I've been talking at this one about how people will offend other people. But I want to go a step further right now and show you. It's almost like God Himself deliberately at times will offend you or let others offend you because He has a positive purpose for doing so. God can see something good that the offense will accomplish if you will respond the right way. You see, ministry for God is really working with people. That's what it is. And if we are easily offended, then we can't work with people. So God will allow offenses to come so that we will learn to not be offended, so that we'll be able to minister to other people. Now, I want to ask you a key question here. I want everybody to respond. This is not a trick question, all right? I fully expect every person here to lift your hand and respond affirmatively to this question. Here's the question. How many here would like for God to take you from where you are right now to His next level up of spiritual or personal or financial blessing? You'd like God to take you from where you are now to His next level up of blessing. How many would like that? Let's see your hands. Wonderful. Now, may I warn you, the way He will probably do it is by doing something or having somebody else do something that offends you. Let me explain to you first why God does this. Then I'll show you how God does this. Why does God do this? God does this in order to humble us so that He can then exalt us and lift us up. What is it that gets offended in you and me anyway? It is our P-R-I-D-E. Say the word, everybody, please. Pride. Everybody read off the screen all together, please. I have had a problem with pride. In fact, keep reading. I may be having a problem with pride right now. Everybody has had some problem with pride, and you might be having a problem with it right now. And what does James chapter 4, verse 6 say? God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He shall lift you up. 1 Peter 5:6, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. So when offenses come, we either take them personally and get offended, or we say, God is trying to give me grace by humbling me so that He can then lift me up and move me forward in my Christian life. Your Christian life could be compared to a garden hose. You take that garden hose, you go out there, you screw it onto the faucet, you turn the water on, and the water flows through the hose and comes back to give refreshment and life and strength to all those beautiful flowers that you planted. And you and I are like that garden hose in that when we are attached to God, then God's water of life, God's blessing, God's strength, God's Holy Spirit flows through our lives to bring the refreshment of God's blessing and help and strength to all those people all around us. And an offense is like a knot in the garden hose. Here you are attached to God, but the people around you are not getting any of the blessings that God means to come through your life because you got offended at God or you got offended at somebody else. And now all that blessing has just stopped flowing completely. And lots of people don't just get bitter at other people. They get bitter at God Himself. And if you get bitter at God, who's going to help you get over your bitterness? Now, I talked about why God allows this. Let's talk about how this happens. There is a way that offenses usually happen to us. Here it is. We will expect that somebody's going to say something or do something or respond a certain way, and they don't do what we expect. I have a whole message on the subject, expectations, the enemy of relationships and gratitude. And in that message, I say these three words. Read it out loud, everybody, would you please? Expectations ruin relationships. You expect somebody to do something. They don't do what you expect. And the expectations ruin the relationships. But that's not all. Expectations also cut you and me off from the blessing that God has planned for us when we become unoffendable like Jesus. It's an interesting story in 2 Kings chapter 5. A little maid from Israel serving this lady, and the master of the house is a mighty captain of the Syrian army by the name of Naaman. But look at his arm there. Naaman was also a leper, a terrible disease. It was essentially a death sentence. And this little maid said, there's a prophet over in Israel by the name of Elisha. And if Naaman would get over there, the prophet could heal him of his disease. So Naaman, mighty Naaman, came with his horses, his chariot. He stood at the door of the house of Elisha. But Elisha did not do what Naaman expected. Elisha sent a messenger to him. Elisha didn't even come to the door himself. And Elisha sent a messenger saying, go and wash in the Jordan River 7 times. Thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean. Elisha stayed inside. You know what that's like? That's like the President of the United States coming to your door and you don't answer it. It's like, whoa. And Naaman, with that, what he thought was a snub he got angry. And he went away and he said, behold, I thought, see, I expected. I thought this is what he was going to do. He would surely come out to me and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God, strike his hand over the place, recover the leper. In other words, he's just going to touch me. I'll be healed. That's what I expected. And the preacher, the man of God, the prophet of God didn't do what I expected. I'm so upset, I'm going away angry without being healed. And his servants looked at him and said, Captain Naaman, sir, if the prophet asked you to do something really difficult, you would have done it. All he asked you to do was dip in the Jordan River. And Naaman said, that river's so muddy, so filthy. The rivers over in Samaria are so much better. But Captain, all he asked you to do was a simple thing. Just dip in the Jordan River. You'll be whole. Okay, I get it. It's terrible. I'll do it. And he gets in the Jordan River. Oh, this is humiliating. This is so terrible. Oh, I got to dip all the way down. Oh, this is awful. Once, I don't see anything happen. Twice, nothing's happened. Look at that. Oh, just mud. Oh, this mud in this river. Oh, I hate this river. Three, four, five, six. And the seventh time he goes down, and when he comes up, he is healed. The leprosy is gone. It is a miracle. It's happened. And he's so grateful. But he almost didn't get healed because he got offended at the way the prophet Elisha did it. But God would not give him his healing until he first humbled himself, refused to get offended, dealt with his anger, was willing to do what he was told. The blessing for his life, he could not have. You know what I wonder? How many people have missed the healing that God had for their marriage? Or the blessing that God had for their children? Or the counsel and the direction that God had for their lives? But they don't get it because they get offended at the preacher. Did you ever ask yourself, what is the most important verse in the Bible for church members? You know, I think the most important verse in the Bible for pastors is the verse that says, feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, etc., etc. But how many are regular members or faithful attenders at Broadview Heights? Let me see your hands. How many? All right. Could I ask you, what may be the most important verse for you as a church member? I think it might be Hebrews 13:17. Read that out loud with me. Would you please, everybody? Obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves. Hold it. The word submit there is not the same as the word where it talks about wives submitting to their husbands. That word, if I remember correctly, is only used in this passage in the New Testament, and it means this: yield your naturally combative nature. It means don't just fight just because you don't like somebody in charge telling you what to do. That's what it means, all right? And then it continues, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account. Do you know what the pastor's job is? The pastor's job is this, watch me. To watch and see what your soul needs, and preach and lead the church so that your needs are met. For they watch for your souls as they that must give account. Did you know your pastor will stand before God one of these days and give account for you? For you. You won't give account for him. He will give account for you. And you may give account for how you treat him, how you listen to him, but you won't give account for him. That they may do it with joy and not with grief. Now, I'd like to stop right here and ask a question. Everybody here, by the way, your pastor, as far as I know, doesn't know this, is in this message, all right? But did you know that everybody here, if I call your name right now, when your pastor hears your name, it will either bring him joy or it will bring him grief. I'm a little hesitant to call some people's name because it's a little hard to fake it, Pastor. You know? But if I were to call your name right now, would it bring him joy, or would it bring him? I have a pastor now. I went for years and didn't have a pastor. I was a pastor. I love having a pastor. I go to him for counsel. He tells me what to do. If somebody doesn't like it, I just say, go talk to him. He's the one who told me to do it. It's easy, you know? That they may do it with joy. And I said to my pastor a few months ago, and I say this to every once in a while, I say, Pastor, I'm doing my best to bring joy and not grief to you. Why? Because that is unprofitable for you. Could I ask you a question right here? If you had $10,000 and you were going to invest that somewhere, would you invest it somewhere that was profitable? Or would you invest it somewhere that was unprofitable? Now, when you invest your life in a church, then your life is more valuable than $10,000. You want to make sure that you get that it produces a profit. You might want to make sure that it is not unprofitable for you. What am I talking about? I remember, it's been quite a few years ago now. I was pastoring our church, and we had a problem in the church. And, it was rough for a while, preacher. Folks got upset. We had about 50 people leave the church. And we were finally starting to recover from that. And one Saturday night, I get a knock on my office door, and a man comes walking in, and he says to me, on Saturday night, I'm trying to prepare for Sunday. I'm trying to have my heart ready and everything for Sunday. He said, I just wanted to come by and let you know my family and I are leaving the church. And I was like, whoa, just hit me with a bucket of cold water instead. You know, it'd be a lot easier. I sat and talked to him for a little while, and finally I looked at him and I said, brother, if you feel like this is what God wants you to do, it's okay, but I don't have peace about this. You didn't really come to ask my counsel. You know, sometimes people will come tell the pastor what they did, and then they walk out and say, I sought the pastor's counsel about this. If you didn't seek his counsel, don't tell people you sought his counsel, all right? And I just said, but, you know, I'll pray for you. I'll pray for you and your family. And, man, I was so close to he and his family. I had married he and his wife years before that. They had, I think, 7 children. All those children were doing well, and it just broke my heart. And all at once, that family leaving the church just created problems in the church all over again. Took weeks to get over it again. And you know what the truth is? After 36 and a half years of doing that, I had a heart attack, and I realized I can't do this anymore. My body won't. That's the reason I stepped down from pastoring and went into evangelism. And I'm all over the country. Last week I was in Springfield, Illinois. The week before that I was in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The week before that I was in Ireland. And next week I'll be, where am I going to be? Peoria, Illinois. And the week then, 2 weeks from today I'll be in Pennsylvania. And people hear that and they say, that's easier than pastoring. And I say, you have no idea the pressures that are on a man when he's pastoring. In fact, I said to my wife 4 years ago, I had stepped down. I'd not been pastor for 2 years. And I said to her, honey, you really would have had my funeral by now if I had not stepped down as pastor. My body was not going to take it anymore. By the way, I challenge young men to become pastors. I think it's a wonderful thing. I miss it. I loved it. And it is the green beret of spiritual life. It really is. Your pastor has many more pressures on him than I have on me. Everybody has difficulties. Everybody has pressures. But it was unprofitable for me, but that's not what it says. It says it's unprofitable for you. And you know what's happened to that man since that day? That man, he and his wife divorced, and the last I heard, every one of his children went the wrong direction, and now his grandchildren are going the wrong direction. And the truth is it was something unprofitable for him. Now, There's a key truth here you need to get. Everybody, now I got some folks that are just sort of sitting there and I'm trying to get you with me, all right? Hello? Hello? Come on. I want everybody here, read this off the screen with me. Would you please, all together, here we go. God offends us, good, to humble us so He can give us His grace, so He can exalt. Oh, that was so good. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, in Numbers 12 and Job 30, it was an insult biblically to spit in somebody's face. I don't know about you, I think it's still an insult to spit in somebody's face. Wouldn't you say that? Have you ever considered how the blind man in John 9 would have never been healed if he would have been easily offended? There were times that Jesus would just touch a blind man and receive his sight, but that's not what Jesus did for this blind man. In John 9:6, when Jesus had thus spoken, He spat on the ground and anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. Whoa. Let me show you what He did here, all right? Who do I use for an illustration? Would you come and help me? He looks like a blind man, doesn't he? Just stand right here. You're blind. All right? Here's what Jesus did. Watch. He spat. My wife told me a while back, she said, "Honey, you don't really have to spit on the floor, do you?" She said, "Can't you act like you're spitting on the floor?" So I tried to act like I was spitting on the floor, preacher. Jesus spit on the ground until He had muddy spit or spitty mud. Spitty mud. It's the equivalent of spitting in somebody's face, but in some ways it's worse. And then close your eyes, blind man. Then He rubbed it all over the blind man's eyes. And then He said to the blind, now what if the blind man at this point he said, wait a minute, what's that you putting on my eyes? You putting spit on my eyes? You're not going to put spit on my eyes. He'd have never been healed. Then Jesus said to him, walk all the way across town to the pool of Siloam with that spitty mud on your eyes. Can you see him walking across town? He's a blind man. Walking all the way across town. Who is that? That's that blind man. What's he got on his face? What is that? Jesus put spitty mud on his face. Oh my goodness, that sounds awful. Yeah, it does. I can't believe he did it. But he gets all the way across town, thank you, sir. And he washes his eyes in the pool of Siloam. And he is healed. Wow. And you know what? You may never find out till you get to heaven all the things you could have had that you don't get from God because you get offended. Because somebody put spitty mud on your face. Now you know what? That was a pretty strong story, wasn't it? Hold on to your seat. It gets stronger. In Matthew 15, a Canaanite woman came to Jesus to plead with Him to heal her daughter. Behold, a woman came out of the same coast, cried unto Him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou Son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. Lord, you got to help my daughter." Now, what do you expect Jesus to do at this point? What's He going to do? Hey, come back up here. Back up here. All right. Here we go. All right. Now, I'm going to try to talk to you. And I'm not here, okay? You don't respond at all. What's your name? No, I do need to get your name. What's your name?
Victor.
Victor, I'm sorry. All right. Victor, he's going to do what I tell him here, isn't he? All right, Victor, you look over that way. Victor, I need to talk to you. And you know what? I'll throw the slide up in a second, but it says, Jesus answered her not a word. She is begging and, thank you, Victor. She is begging and pleading with him, and he answered her not. She worships. She's begging. She's pleading. Lord, help my daughter. And then the next thing he says is this. It's not me to take the children's bread and to cast it to the dogs. Wow. Would you get offended at that point? You're trying to talk to somebody and they don't respond like you think they should. By the way, don't forget, this is the absolutely perfect Son of God who never did anything wrong. In any sense, never did anything wrong. He's trying to show us something here. By the way, if anybody here is not a Jew, all of us, the rest of us, are Gentile dogs. And the Lord loved us. And in Romans, it says He's grafted us into the tree. But this woman will not be put off. She said, truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. I might be a dog, that's fine. I want some crumbs. And Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. But if that woman had gotten easily offended, her daughter would have never been healed. Read this with me, would you please, everybody? The destiny God has for man unfolds or dies at the junction of offense. The most important event of your life, right before God helps you with that event, He'll probably allow some kind of offense to come into your life. And if you don't deal with it properly by accepting His grace and not becoming offended, then He won't be able to lift you up and accomplish what God wanted to do in your life. The whole rest of your life depends on how you deal with offenses. Now, I suggest you write this next one down. Anytime you hear about somebody getting offended, your next thought should be, read it please, I wonder what phenomenal blessing God was about to give them. You hear somebody, they get their feelings hurt, they get offended, they get upset, and you hear about that, you should next think, I wonder what God was about to do for them. God has a purpose for offenses. Satan has a purpose for what as well. People who get offended get a bad attitude. Is that of God or of Satan? I had a pastor friend, I was telling him about this message. And he said in his church they would sing happy birthday to people on Sunday. One Sunday they forgot. 2 weeks later, this big manly guy comes walking in his office after church. He's crying. Pastor said, what's the matter, brother? He said, I was here 2 weeks ago and you didn't sing happy birthday to me. At first the pastor thought he was joking. Then he realized the man was serious. People who get offended split churches. People who get offended become a bad testimony. People who get offended break fellowship with God and the church. People who get offended go to liberal or apostate churches. Look, if you're in a liberal church, you don't get offended. You just get out. In Revelation, that's what it says. People who get offended backslide and quit. And you remember my opening story, I'm not quite to the end of my message yet, but the pastor's waiting on the phone for this deacon to come back. And after about 5 minutes, his wife comes and says he can't come to the phone right now. And the pastor said, I'll try to call him again. The pastor tried to call him again and again, and the man wouldn't talk to him. And finally, the pastor found out something that a lady said about his tie offended him. Then he got offended more when the pastor didn't miss him Sunday morning, and even more on Sunday night. This previously godly deacon dropped completely out of church. His wife and daughter kept coming without him. When a man drops out of church, anything can happen. Because he ceases to receive the regular exhortation that we all need to stay right with God. What is that? There is the possibility of offense is the positive purpose. And that is God offends us to humble us and give us the grace so He can exalt us. The peace for offenses is almost too simple. Read it out loud, everybody, please. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. If you're going to become unoffendable, you're going to have to develop a relationship with this book, the Word of God. Anytime you find yourself offended by anyone or anything, the first thing you should say is, uh-oh, something isn't right in my relationship with the Bible. Because it is not simply a book that you listen to the preacher preach from. It is a living book that you love. Notice all the times, I don't have time to read them all, that the Bible talks about loving His testimonies and loving His Word and the testimonies of the stories that illustrate for us different truths that we need to know, or we're going to be offended and we're going to have problems. My soul has kept Thy testimonies. I love them. I love them more than gold. You got to develop a proper relationship with the Word of God. And another thing you've got to do, I didn't have time to describe that second point. You've got to die to self. What is it in you and me that gets upset anyway? It is the old self life. Paul said, I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. When you get upset, it shows that you aren't dead to self. You go to a funeral home, you look in the casket, and you walk right up to that casket and you say to that person, you're ugly. Does that person get offended? Why? You say to that person, I don't like the way you look. I don't like anything about you. Do they get offended? No, why don't they get offended? Because they are. And when you and I get offended, it shows we're not dead to self. This is a true story. A preacher friend in Florida told the story. He said there was a funeral visitation going on. The body was laying here. The family's lined up here. People are coming down here. They heard the doors spring open all at once. A guy walked in the back, came right down the middle aisle, reached up and slapped the guy in the casket on the face and said, I got you back. Turned around and walked out. And you know what that guy in the casket did? Same thing he was doing before. And when you and I respond the wrong way to offenses, it shows that we are not truly dead to self. There's the story about the man who dropped out of church and now he started drinking. Then he became an abusive husband and father. Then his wife left him and took their daughter with her. Then he got arrested for driving under the influence. Then he lost his $150,000 a year job. And his preacher said to me, Brother Davis, the last time I talked to him, he's in a 12-step program for alcoholics. And he said, Pastor, I have ruined my life. And it all started over what Jackie said about my tithe. Then I got offended at you. Then I multiplied offense on top of offense. By the way, Pastor, do you know what Jackie said about my tithe that offended me? Now, how many men here, you don't have to wear a tie to come to church, but several of y'all got ties on. If you don't mind, you don't have to do this, but those men who are here, you have ties on, I want y'all to stand up right now, would you? All over the house. If you're a man here, you got a tie on, stand up. All right? Now, don't sit down until I tell you to sit down. He said, Jackie walked up to me and said, that material would make a pretty dress. All right. Everybody sitting down, turn if you can, look at somebody's tie and say to them, that material would make a pretty dress. All right? Find somebody and point them and say, that material would make a pretty dress. All right? All right? Now, all you guys with ties, I want you to hold your tie out like this. Turn around, face the congregation, and go like this and say, would you like to use my tie to make a dress? You'd like to use my tie to make a dress? Thank you. You may be seated. I preached this one place. Somebody spoke up and said, an awfully skimpy dress. Great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. I was witnessing to a lady on the airplane one day, and I told her that Jesus said He was the way, the truth, and the life, and no man could come to the Father except by Him. Nobody. And that lady looked at me and she said, Are you saying that Jesus is the only way to get to heaven? And I said, well, yes, ma'am, that's what. She said, I don't want to hear anything else about it. And you know, if you're here and you're lost this morning, you've never trusted Jesus, I hope I don't offend you. I'm trying to not offend you is the truth. But the truth is this. You will not get to heaven by your good works, by your church membership, by your baptism, by treating your neighbor right. You've got to admit to God you're a lost sinner for yourself and call on God, repenting of your sin, asking Jesus to come into your heart and be your Savior. Remember my opening statement? Everybody read it out loud with me off the screen. All together, here we are. We are in a war, and the enemy is out to stop you and defeat you. But he wants to do it in such a way that you will agree with him that it was justified. You will unwittingly accept defeat, and the way he'll do it is with offenses. Are you offended, or are you unoffendable? Would you bow with me, please? Amen.